Welcome to another episode of the Beyond Tolerant podcast. My name is Mark Thiele, and I'm your host of, well, this podcast, as well as the event series. Today's guest is someone whose work you've almost certainly come across already, even if you don't know his name yet. He's the founder of Piccalilli, one of the best places on the web for honest, no-nonsense, front-end education. He's also the founder of Set Studio, a design and development agency doing some excellent work. Next to this, he might be one of the most outspoken voices in our industry right now, particularly when it comes to web standards, progressive enhancement, and the direction the industry is heading with AI. He spoke at Beyond Tolerant, and I've been wanting to sit down with him for a proper conversation ever since. Please welcome Andy Bell. Hey, just a quick note before we get into this episode. This episode is supported by Mittwald, and I want to take a moment to properly introduce them because they are not just a sponsor, they are my hosting partner and my global gold partner for 2026 for Beyond Tolerant. Mittwald is a German hosting company based in Espelkamp, right in the heart of Germany. And what makes them stand out is that they build everything around the needs of agencies and freelancers. Their own data center, their own platform called MStudio, and the team that actually listens and is there when you need them. Their hosting is 100% climate neutral, fully GDPR compliant, and runs on renewable energy. For anyone building web projects, Mittwald gives you the infrastructure and the flexibility to do it properly without having to worry about the bits underneath. The fact that they are our global gold partner for 2026 says a lot. Beyond Tolerant has always been about working with people who genuinely care about what they do, and so does Mittwald. Well, and that's why they fit perfectly, I guess. You can find more about them at mittwald.de. Thanks a lot for supporting Beyond Tolerant. So here he is, Andy Bell. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good seeing you. Last time in November live. And then now
in Berlin.
You're in my little freak show.
It's amazing. Had a great time. Yeah.
Did you? That's good to hear. I mean, it's the stuff I do for 15 years. Can you believe it nowadays? Mm. Like 15 years.
You can feel it though when you're there. Yeah, like you can tell you've been doing it for that long. It's everything runs so well. So yeah. You do a good thing.
Oh, well, glad you say that. So you didn't like see all the mistakes and the things behind the scenes that didn't work out.
I walked past backstage like this so I couldn't see behind the curtain.
Well, yeah. You're talking about production. You do some pretty tough stuff as well with your Piccalilli, right? With Piccalilli, mm-hmm. which is like, and it's independent, right? Ran by you as a single person? Is it true? Is that correct?
Me and a team of four of us all together. Yeah. So,
oh, really? Yeah. Who's the rest?
A handful. So we've got me, then we've got Leanne, who runs our tech stuff, Jason, who runs our design stuff, and then we've got Vicky, who's producer, organizer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, good person.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, how on earth and why the heck did you start another a video course platform? What's your aim? What drives you to go through all the pain?
I think something that I believe in and will continue to believe in no matter what the industry does is if you get good education from someone that's got a lot of experience in the industry, it's worth more than any number of other sources. So I saw a bit of a hole in the education space and decided, let's fill it with more pragmatic stuff rather than a crash course on a specific skill or a specific framework. Mm-hmm. It was more, let's give people a broader education. So, for example, on my course, it's a CSS course, but a good portion of the course is actually teaching how to plan properly, how to communicate with designers properly. And then we've got Scott's Mindful Design course, which teaches you all about how the brain works first and then teaches you how to apply your design skills to work with how people's brains work. So, yeah, that's what we wanted to target, really, was a deeper understanding of the job that we do.
Okay, and you said there was a hole that you've seen. What do you mean with that? Is it like, there's lots of platforms out there, right?
Yeah, of course, so, yeah. And lots of great courses out there as well. I just think there was a niche formula in my brain, and I thought we're not an American platform as well. I think that's that's quite unique.
True, yeah.
And then I think certain publications like CSS Strixon, it's back now. It dropped off for a while. And then and the Sidebar newsletter, for example. And so there's these sort of like holes that I thought we should probably fill, actually, with, producing really good articles and then later doing the courses too, and then the newsletter. And yeah, I feel like we sort of did that. And continue to do that.
I have to say, I'm a really, really big fan of the newsletter, in particular, because it's great mix of stuff that you always have in there. Yeah. It's like not just really one direction. As you know, my event is all about this, right? Like not just like being like completely niche, but you got some good stuff, some good tech stuff. You get some good like inspirational links that you can see, and sometimes very personal ones as well, right? Some redesigns of websites and stuff. I have to say, in every newsletter, I find some links that I can take and add to my list of bookmarks, really.
Yeah, that's the aim. Like, it's 5 links twice a week. And even if you don't like follow through all of them, like, it's still opening you up to what's going on without you having to trawl through timelines, and that's becoming increasingly difficult for people with, everything going on right now. And having that sort of curated source, we go into the mines for you and find the good stuff. And then, the hope is, like you said, that one or two links in each issue you can store away and enjoy, and that's good. And the personal sites thing as well, like surfacing people's cool personal sites, hopefully to inspire you to build your own personal site. So
Loop back to the video courses. What's the approach of it? Is it just you and your team creating the courses? Do you invite like other authors to join you, and what's the idea behind it in terms of the topics and the range of topics? I mean, if you start more courses, will it broaden to UX and this kind of stuff, or is it just really focused on development? Explain it a little bit, please.
Yeah, so it started off with me first as the canary. We knew what we wanted to do. So we knew we wanted to give each author their own sort of brand. We knew we wanted like their course to feel like their space, and both externally and internally. So we did mine first in 2024, mainly to get the system. So we built our own platform and our own systems behind that. And we wanted to develop an editorial system. So we used me as the guinea pig. We did my course. And then last year, we got 2 different authors. We got Scott Riley and Matt Marquis. So Scott did Mindful Design, and Matt did JavaScript for Everyone. So then, but they're very sort of like close friends. Like we known each other a long time, and it was a safer bet, because like, right, well, we know each other. We're still working on our editorial process, so there's going to be rough around the edges at times. But because they're both so experienced, it worked really well. And then the future plan is to bring more authors in, and like you say, we'll expand. So we are talking to an author who's wanted to do a UX course, and an author that wanted to do an accessibility course, for example.
Nice.
And even like design system. Yeah. So there's more to come. But instead of rushing, we like to do it right, because we want to produce like really high quality stuff. So doing it.
I mean, I got 2 of the courses. I got the Mindful Design course and your CSS course. And I have to say, like, it's not nothing that you can do between tea and like lunchtime or whatever, right? Mm. So it's like really, you need to sit down. I mean, you can stop and start and everything, but like it's very, it's a lot of stuff, right? So, and it's good quality. It's good fun to do it. But you say like, well, okay, we want to focus on quality and like go deep into topics. What did you think, or like what did you take the concept of a video course being like one big video course instead of like chopping it off and up into like 10 small snippets that you can buy, like whatever, like this?
Yeah. I think you could possibly do that with Scott's course. I think that, so like mine and Matt's are very linear. So like, for example, you couldn't pick up my course from the middle of the course because you miss out on all the sort of stuff that builds you up to that place where you currently are. Scott's is similar to that, but I think it's something we're exploring and it's something we're thinking about is like, yes, we've got these sort of headline courses that are the longer, more in-depth, like say. And the idea of them is like you take that course and your career opportunities by doing that should increase like massively because the depth of knowledge that you're getting and the experience that you're getting from doing them should really set you out from others if you're wanting to move up in your career. But the skill stuff's important. So specific types of things that people want to learn. The problem is, Mark, is that that's a crowded space. So it's not somewhere that we're sort of aiming to wade into in a rush. Really, I want to see how the next few months pan out in terms of the way the industry is currently going.
Absolutely. We'll get to this point later.
Yeah. Things to say on that, Mark. I'm one of those annoying, boring people that's just pragmatic. And so I don't like to rush into things. So like we did these courses and they're really good and they're going really well. And it's just like, right, let's just see what we can do next and do them at a decent pace. We're lucky that we've got the agency as well, but it's a good way of working. It feels very punk at the moment to work like that, which is good. Yeah.
So, and how do you approach the production? Do we have a studio where people come to? Is it like a home recorded for them? Because then you need to make sure that they have proper quality hardware to record stuff, video, and also audio is very important, I think. Yeah. Maybe even more than video, actually.
It's going to depend. So we were quite lucky with Scott with his video course where he had a lot of gear already and knowledge. So he did all of that in his own space. But for another author who not in that position, then the production would look different, where we'd have to do a lot more pre-production and then a shorter recording run in, like you say, like a third-party space. So it varies. It varies per author on how they like to work too. So the way I did it was over a very long time, short bursts, and then like I basically vanished for 2 months. And wrote all the drafts and then re-emerged again. Matt was very consistent in terms of he just like churned through it piece by piece, like a marathon runner and just delivered it. But then, you know, he's published like 3 books at this point. So, you know, he's got it in him. And then Scott did cycles. So like every unit he did in sort of like a 2 week burst each time and then had a break and then did another unit and then had a break. So it's all going to depend on how the author likes to work. And the sort of guardrails we put in place is more of a system. So it's like a piece of content for a course has to go through this process in order to be released. So it's like various editorial passes and asset passes and stuff. And to make sure that piece of markdown that it starts as turns into something that's publishable. In the course itself. Yeah. So we try and keep it flexible because you never know what authors' requirements are going to be. So forcing them down a specific route feels suboptimal. It is just the reason why we built our own platform. The options out there just weren't flexible enough for us. We wanted authors to have the ability to do some long form prose, but then if they wanted, they could do a module in video or, you know, like the opportunities are sort of endless for them.
Okay. We are back after a little video accident, whatever happened there. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, that's great. I think it's a great approach, and you can certainly feel the quality. From the price point, like how did you come up with like the finding out what the value is, what people are prepared to pay for it, and is that something where you say like, well, oh shit, we should have made it more expensive because now we see like how big of an like industry that is, like, and how many people are involved, and many questions, like what's the price point first of all?
So, like, for the course is £249 full price, and we base that on a bit on research people, and also like a huge amount of research across the industry in terms of like where pricing is, and then where we thought the courses were in relative to that. But the main thing also was it has to be affordable. Like, there's premium content, but then it has to be affordable too. So, like that. 249 was like the ceiling as far as I was concerned, because anything above that, your boss has to buy it for you. And
yeah. So that you mean there's the sweet spot of like, okay, I could be able to pay that myself, or I'm willing to pay that myself if my boss wouldn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at the actual workshops that are happening like in person, I haven't seen any of that price point, to be honest. Like they're most likely at least €100 or £100 more expensive.
Yeah,
plus
exactly,
you have
yeah.
to travel there, and you have to get food for the day and all the kind of stuff. Well, if the workshop isn't catered, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always a big fan of in-person, but when it comes to workshops, I have to say it works both for me. If you're just someone who really wants to learn stuff and a workshop is not so much exchanging with people in the breaks, you know, like you have that, but like it's not the focus. It's not like as any like a conference where you have a talk and then you have a break and then you have the evening stuff where people mix and mingle. For the workshop, it's more about like learning, understanding, and asking maybe the author or the coach of the course some questions. But that's possible with you as well, I guess, right?
Of course, we've got Discord and stuff. And I think that's because a workshop's quite intense for both the sort of teacher and the people that are attending, because like I say, it's even a remote one, it's like, you know, I did the smashing comp ones, and that it was 5 2.5 hour sessions. So and you know, twice a week for 3 weeks. So it's quite an intense amount of learning to do. Yeah. And in person, you know, 8 hours of just intense learning, often a day after you've just sat and watched a lot of conference talks too. So your brain is already full of knowledge already. So I think courses are a good way of doing it in your own time, right? And doing it as any pace that's comfortable. So we often get asked, like, well, how long does it take? And, you know, it's going to vary depending on how deep you want to go. But also, like, you should be able to do a couple of hours and then walk away for a few weeks and come back and then do another few hours and sort of slowly do it. And of course, gives you that opportunity. I know if you attend a workshop or a video workshop, then you get the videos back at the end. But yeah, having that sort of self-paced learning is really important, I think.
True, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is the plan working out for you guys? I mean, how long? It's 2 years now, right? Is it true? Nearly 2 years now? Is it working out in terms of like people booking it financially? And like, is there any surprise where they're like, whoa, I haven't seen that coming? Whether it be like how many people come or mistakes you've done or whatever?
So last year was a lot quieter than we wanted it to be. I remember writing a post about it, and it picked up, but the industry has changed considerably in a very short amount of time.
I can prove that, yes. I can say say that.
And I think there's last year into this year, there's been shifts in AI, et cetera. But also, it's easy to blame it all on that, but there's also been like economic shifts as well. So there's, you know, the industry's been in a period of decline for a long time.
Layoffs
that come from the opposite of decline, right? They are a symptom of decline. And there was a lot of that last year, and a lot of sort of geopolitical instability. This year started even more so. So in terms of, is it going to plan, in terms of what we are aiming to produce and our sort of principles on content we're producing? Absolutely. Is it going as to plan as much as we'd like financially? Probably not. But then we are, like I said earlier, we're lucky in the sense that we've got the agency too. So like, there's not the pressure to make this thing work for like the entirety of sort of the business's income. So we're in a position where we can sit back, do what we do best, which is produce good stuff, and see what happens over the course of the next few months and for the rest of the year. And then I think if you move at the same pace that the industry moves, then you're destined to mess up, right? So it's better to sort of hang back and observe it as neutrally as possible as well, and like research the facts. So I've spent a lot of time learning about finance, not because I'm interested in finance, because I want to understand the AI bubble more from a sort of financial perspective. And the math doesn't math, Mark. It's not there.
Yeah. I find it really interesting, how brave someone is to like come up with like an idea like this, because it's not just like you like sitting in front of the camera and recording some stuff, right? So it's like proper courses, other people are involved, you're responsible for that. And is that something that you've learned through you running your studio, Set Studio, which is also running for quite a while already? Is that what made you confident that this will be working out for you?
Yeah. So there's an intrinsic relationship between the two, in terms of one of the things that's a benefit of Piccalilli is like the education is rooted in actual experience, right? Like we are every day working with clients and building real stuff for real people. I think with other types of education, it's not as much rooted in that. But then it suits that type of education. So like the bleeding edge stuff, like it's demo, because like that's all you can really do, right? Whereas we tend to try and loop everything back into like, yes, it's all this amazing stuff, right? But this approach works really well. So like for the way I approach layout, for example, it's like it works really well. And we know it does because we've built huge projects with it, you know, for clients. Yeah. So, and that is that sort of assurance that we'd like to sort of provide with our approach of, yes, we've got this agency and it works with clients all the time. And what we wanted to do was share that knowledge. So Piccalilli's existed a long time, but it existed as my sort of personal blog for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then at the start of 2024, we all like got together and it was like, what do we want to do this year? And like, I was like, I'd quite like to bring Piccalilli back. But if we do, we've got a lot of work to do because it was in a mess the way I'd left it. So we did a full, well, just because I built it and built it as like a hobby thing. So it was just like sticky tape and dreams, the system, like, you know, I was editing a big compiled CSS file because I couldn't get SAS to work anymore and stuff like that. But then it was an old code base, you know, it was 2018. So it was an old code base.
Yeah, true.
And so we did a full rebrand on it and everything as a client. So like we treated it as a client. We wrote about that on Piccalilli as well. Like,
okay.
And so we always knew it would do well. It's done better than we thought it would do, for sure.
Very good. Very good to hear.
And we just got to keep going with it. Really, it's just that's continuity and consistency. It's like that. That's what we know we can do. So that's what we carry on doing with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Set Studio, is that also running well? What's your where do you position your studio? Is it most likely consultant work these days, or are you still building websites for people? Really?
Oh yeah, we're building. Yeah, for sure. We nice. Tend to come good from to a design. So we're design first at the studio. So for example, like we're doing a branding project at the moment, and then that's kind of moving to a like web redesign project and design system. So that they're like the sort of three things that we specialize in. It's like branding, design systems, and and website stuff. And yeah, it's going really good. Again, like last year was quite quiet. But it was quiet because we got a lot of inquiries last year, but it was for AI startups, ChatGPT
rappers. Oh, yeah, okay.
We just have no interest in that world.
Interesting, right?
Well, I think something that you need to consider in this situation, so if you're an independent or a freelancer, is the brand risk of working with such companies, especially with technology that's already affiliated with encouraging people to commit suicide, for example. Like, there's a lot that can go wrong. And then if you work with these people and produce brand for them and produce all the marketing assets, then there's a complicity there that you may or may not have. So yeah, obviously you need to pay the bills, but at the same time, just remember the brand risk. And that I just wasn't really willing to do that.
Yeah, true.
Risk.
So, I mean, those of the listeners or viewers who know you, know that you have a strong standpoint to that topic, right? I guess you see a tension between making the web for everyone and AI's industry's current direction, right? So tell us more about this. What's your thinking of that? Like, I mean, it's pretty obvious that AI won't go away anymore. Like, so what's your perspective on that? Like, so
like I said earlier, like, I knew I didn't like this technology from the moment it arrived because of the means of how it arrived. It was models trained on stolen property, stolen content.
Yeah. Especially talking about generative like artwork or music or whatever that is.
Exactly, Yeah, it's incredibly resource intensive. It creates environmental damage. And it's also used to produce material that should never be produced today, such as like the CSAM stuff with Grog. So there's sort of like four main things there underneath it. Oh, sorry, five. The now over $1 trillion of investment that's gone into it. So there's those points there. And then you look at the quality of the output and it's poor, really. I think even a sort of enthusiastic AI user will concede that in general AI is poor, unless you really hamstring it into doing what you need it to do, and then it's still reasonably poor. Yeah.
So you think it would need time until people recognize it's not as good as the first impression gave them, or do you think?
Well, this is the conflict. Yeah. So there's so the technology is not ready. So for AI companies to be able to run, they need to make money off this technology. In order for that to happen, they need mainstream subscriptions, right? And that what I mean by mainstream is not people in the tech industry. No. Now, we know people are using AI tools a lot because A, they've been pushed on them, and B, they can use them for free. So they'll mess around with ChatGPT for free. They'll mess around with Facebook's, whatever it's called, for free. When they're having to pay, and it will have to be minimum hundreds a month from at the base level, hundreds of thousands for businesses for a year on their teams for these companies to even get close to making the right sort of revenue. But then these companies also are now huge amount of debt assigned to them as well. So already billions invested in them. There's infrastructure, more billions, chips, more billions. Infrastructure is going to take time to build. So they're going to have to build a demand during that, and the demand is just not there. Yeah, it's just not currently there.
It's not there. And also I see that the technology and the infrastructure they use nowadays is old in times when people might start to use it, like, you know?
Yeah, so it takes you 2 years to build a data center, and you've already bought chips for those data centers, and then the data center's finished, but then those chips are no longer the best chips. So you fill the data center with different chips, more billions, and then it's the finances just don't make sense when you actually like look at it from a sort of pragmatic viewpoint, unless there's a unbelievably monumental shift across everyone at the same time. which is not going to happen. So the technology is never going away. Like, I mean, we saw it. Telerand, you can run it locally on your laptop, right? So I don't think, so the tech industry where we're based, I think it's going to be a developer tool forever. But what is almost certainly going to happen is there will be a bubble pop. Maybe not pop, maybe it's a deflation, like the dot-com bubble was a deflation. It went on for around 3-4 years, isn't it? The dot-com crash. I think similar is going to come. In fact, I'm pretty convinced similar is going to come. And the impact it's going to have, just not just on the tech industry and just economically in general, is going to be pretty severe. And
I think so.
I don't want to get behind that. Yeah.
I have the feeling that from a standpoint of an organizer of events in person with people coming to it, that those people who usually pay for the tickets when it comes to agencies or companies, and they are missing at the moment for me, to be honest.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's individuals buying, but it's not the like I used to have teams of 30 people being sent by their boss to say like, make it a team experience, go there and be at the event the 2 days and then come back energized and stuff. So it's not happening at the moment. Mm. And I have the feeling, I don't know if it's true or right, but I have the feeling that those agencies and teams or the bosses of those agencies and teams, they're sitting there and just waiting in this kind of like...
What's going to happen?
Like, what's happening? So how when they're unsafe, unsure, uncertain about like, so what's next? Like, do I set on that horse? Do I wait? Will it evolve? So it's like, and that's the kind of like strange silence. I don't know. It feels like a vacuum we're in right now, for me at least, right? I have no idea either. So I go like, okay, I'm certainly not going to jump on the AI hype train and go like push all like the AI stuff on my stage because it doesn't interest me, to be honest. But surely like there will be topics covering or touching AI topics, right? And that's okay, right? If it's in the right way and direction. But really it's for me, it's like this kind of like, so what's next? I mean, what's next? And when is it happening? Like, when is it like, I don't know how to describe it. It feels like a big lump of stuff is in the tube, right? And and at some point it goes like, finally we are back, not back to normal. That's wrong. But we now have a way to deal with it, and it's okay to be at events again. And it's important to meet people in real life and exchange and learn from each other, right? So this kind of stuff. And I think that's missing, and it frustrates me, to be honest.
Ditto. I mean, there's a cynicism as well with a lot of companies at the moment, like the sort of AI mandates. Like, I think if I was to give a listener one piece of advice, if your company are mandating that you use AI, then unionize, because they're not mandating you to use AI for fun. They're mandating you to use AI because they want you gone. It's simple as that. Like, there's no more positive way to look at it than that. So unionize. Mm-hmm. And that's the cynicism that they're like. But then it's just just companies in general, right? They're just...
That's a problem. That's a problem with most of the fast expanding tech and stuff where people go like, wow, right? Yeah. So that's a big issue in general, not just of AI, to be honest. It's like talking about social media, it's done and broken nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not for the people anymore. It's not meant for the people.
No.
It's just meant to make a lot of money for other people.
A lot of influence.
So for coming back to the AI topic, does it also say like, how do I put it? Do you think progressive enhancement and web standards, talking about AI and what we've spoken about before, feel now counter-cultural at the moment? Like,
they always have.
Because it's...
I wrote about this recently where, like, I think if you in the web, well, especially since like 2010s, if you've taken progressive enhancements seriously and web standards and accessibility, you've been swimming against the current of the industry. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I mean, the typical output from a LLM, unless you sort of steer it otherwise, it'll default to using Next.js and Tailwind. because so much of the industry hype and sort of writing and content from that era up into the sort of early to mid 2020s was specifically those frameworks, right? And then the React ecosystem around it. So by process of popularity, then the probability machine, which is what an LLM is going to produce you the most likely outcome that you want, which is a Next.js system with Tailwind providing the UI on it. So I do think AI is at odds with web standards. I know things are getting better. We always hear, but things are getting better. Something that you got to remember, though, with that is things may well be getting better, but there's already thousands, probably millions of websites that have been produced with this technology already, which are not. And they're there forever now, or they're there for a long time at least. And they're there, they are now continuing to produce a bad user experience for people, unless you're on a high spec Mac on a high speed connection in San Francisco. You know, like everyone else, not going to get a great experience. But then that's not unique to AI. I think that's there's been a decline in standards, I think, for a good half a decade at this point in the industry. And I think the AI hype cycle that we're in is only accelerating that. So, I mean, what I would say to sort of a listener who's not into the idea of declining standards is to make sure that the standards are kept high, and that any sort of influence to, you know, it's fine, just do this, just do that, is cut out. Because if you allow them to carry on declining, then the sort of baseline experience for people is going to be just dreadful. The AI, I think, it's just not helping in general, really, I think, in summary.
True. So would you be brave enough to have any prediction where this all is going to lead to, like, or what your position is in there? Because you say, like, okay, well, it's not going to go away. So do you see yourself as someone who needs to educate people about it?
I don't want to, think...
Because you're the enemy then. You're the people.
Yeah.
Because it's dangerous, right? Like,
until I see some serious regulation, until I see some serious environmental changes. I mean, the toothpaste is out of the tube, right? So that you can't put it back in. But like I said about when we're talking about the cost and stuff earlier, there's plenty of people talking about AI. And our principle is we're just not going to do that. And we're going to set out our stand of, look, we're not into this. We're here to produce human content for humans, right? And we're going to carry on doing that. And if I was to predict, then wait until the sort of quarter four numbers start coming in from the AI companies. Maybe some might have already come in. And then the Q1 for this year. OpenAI, for example, need to have made a impossible amount of revenue in order to unlock the next round of funding that they need to grow. If I was to predict anything, I'd say one or two of the bigger AI companies are going to struggle this year. And I think that'll have a domino effect on the software as a service industry in terms of producing AI capabilities. I think that's as broad as I'll go with a prediction. That the 2026 at the moment feels like there's been a surge in AI popularity. I don't think that's a genuine surge. I think that's a manufactured surge. And my advice to people that are holding on, keep on holding, would be my advice. because you don't have to hold on for much longer, I don't think. But in terms of it being a tool for developers, that's never going to go away. It's going to be here forever. So it is going to be part of people's tool chain. So there's probably going to be a necessity to at least understand it for the job market. But again, unless you're being mandated, like you can't really be left behind with AI because it's changing all of the time. So just like the frameworks were once upon a time, you can get yourself up to speed with these tools very, very quickly. So don't worry about being left behind. Just wait until you have to use it, and in all likeliness, that'll only be a short-term thing. So yeah, play ball, as it were.
However direction or whichever direction it takes, interesting times ahead. Like, and I hope it's going to be, and it's not, I'm not just talking about AI, it's going to be less grim, less pessimistic, and a bit more sunshine in our lives again, right? So like,
we need some, something, don't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
We need,
in general, we do, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, talking about digital AI and all the kind of stuff, I see you sit in front of a shelf with a lot of, what is it behind you? The younger records. People who listen or watch this are records, right?
Yeah.
Why not? Are you a big collector?
I wouldn't say massive, but it's, but then every time I look at it, it's getting bigger and bigger. So it's, yeah, getting there, but it's great. I love it.
Like, so you're still buying? Music.
Yeah, yeah.
You're still buying vinyl, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So what's the music direct? Is there any direction, or is it just general interest in music? Or
it's very, yeah, general. Specific? Yeah, I mean, I'm probably more into heavier stuff. If you were to, and hip-hop are probably the two sort of top genres for me. But yeah, I really like to mix it up. I've got the whole collection. It's on my site. So yeah, I keep a sort of record of everything on there. So it's very eclectic, but... Yeah, I'm a massive music fan. I'm absolutely huge.
Oh, cool.
And
how do you listen to them these days?
So the vinyls have got a little turntable down there, the stereo.
Okay.
And then it's also got a CD player on there as well. But then I rip everything digitally as well myself. So yeah, I like building this. Yeah, the aim for the end of this year is to be off streaming services for me completely.
I said it to you earlier. And it's
just like randomly grabbed some. I got vinyl as well, still, right?
Yeah,
like,
see, Black Flag from Resin. Yeah.
Punk.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how it starts. You get like a sort of manageable collection like that. And then you blink, and then suddenly you've got an entire Kallax full of it behind you. So.
Yeah, I think.
But I love it though.
It's one shelf of like 30 centimeters, so it's like a meter of LPs that I still own. And I oftentimes thought, like, will I throw them away? And I was like, no.
Never.
Why? I mean, it's they don't take much space, I have to say, also, right? So it's like, for them, and it's like so many, music in general, I think, are so many memories. Oftentimes, a track is played in the radio and you instantly take them back to the time when you listen to that song for the first time, right? So, so it's the same for me with looking at covers of albums.
Yeah.
Look at it and go like, well, that was like 1986, blah, 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 where, you know, like this kind of stuff where it instantly gives you flashbacks, positive flashbacks most of the time.
It's nice just to sort of read the notes and appreciate the art. And that's something that people got to do more, is appreciate the art, right? And find... Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad going on at the moment. So find something that you really like and really lean heavily into it for a while and enjoy yourself.
Are you also creating music yourself? Are you playing in a band or like producing any music at home or something?
I used to be like a musician, so like drums and stuff, but I don't play much anymore. I want to, but probably not in a band again. Done that, been there, done that, done the touring and stuff, but definitely play more and... do more with kids and stuff, like they're learning instruments as well. So yeah, maybe build a little band from that. But it's just in terms of
the bells.
The bells. But yeah, that is cool. No, big fan. I'd wanted to be in music, not in tech. So I ended up falling into tech by accident via music. So,
well, there's like similar thing for me as well, right? being like 14, I started playing bass and we always had a band in back in school. And that dream was, pretty quickly it was like dreamt and it was over. You recognized, okay. Like so many want exactly that, right? So,
it's a lot of work.
I don't know. Oh, yeah. And also, it sounds like this kind of blah, blah, but you have to be at the right place at the right moments. Yep. You have to like network a lot and meet people and similar to what you have to do nowadays with certain like businesses. But well, yes. And then I got into it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So much competition now.
And less concerts, to be honest. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Mm. So back when I was playing in a school band, there was like a concert like every week somewhere in our little village, right? So, or little city, like three places where you could play. You'd always bring the whole like a class and all that kind of stuff. So it always was quite packed with like 200 people, affordable. And people were just coming without knowing your music. And these days it's like, so like people are so picky about what band they're going live to. And concerts are like so expensive. Even the one we played in November here in Krefeld, they charge 23 euros for the entrance. Yeah.
Man.
I was like, what? I mean, we were four bands, but still, right? 23 euros. And then on top, you have a couple of beers as well, right?
Yeah.
Drinks in general. Not all necessarily beer, but in my case, it was beer. And then you pay for that as well, right? So, and if I imagine like beer is now, what is it? 4 or 5 euros over here?
Yeah.
And that's quite some money for the evening. Just to see some band that you don't know.
Isn't it? I mean, when I used to live in Leeds, I used to be able to go to, you popped Crash Records on a Saturday and you spend a fiver on a ticket to like the cockpit or Leeds Met Uni or somewhere around there, Brudenell Social Club. And I'd watching shows every week, you know, like literally every single week we'd be going and watching shows fiver ago. And yeah. I mean, 20, 23 euros for yours. I mean, you go and see any sort of signed band now, it's minimum 40 quid these days, you know. Big part of the experience. But I mean, watching a show every week definitely gave me permanent tinnitus too.
I have a little wooden box down in my basement where all the tickets are still in, right? That I got from back in the day. So recently we had a conversation with the band and I photographed some of them, and someone else on Facebook posted some old ticket to their own band's concert. And I thought like, oh, I have plenty of those as well. And I got out the folder with all that. And so I'm going to build a website nowadays, like which is an archive of that stuff that hasn't been digital back then, right? Like for those bands. Pretty good unknown stuff, but just for your own sake and for your own archive and let's make it.
It's just a nice thing to do, isn't it? It's a wholesome thing to do. So yeah, good on you.
Cool, yo. So what's up next for you then?
I think 2026 is a year of seeing what happens. I think I've asked to explain it. We're busy at the moment in the studio. Doing some really cool stuff at the moment. So we're just enjoying doing that right now. And
you're rebuilding your own website as well from scratch in the open?
Yeah. So I've been chipping away at that throughout the year. I've been really busy the last few weeks. So sorry, everyone. I've not really had a chance to get on it again. But I thought it'd be a great time to sort of open the door and say, all right, okay, this is how I would go right from start all the way to the end, and in a sort of pragmatic as possible way, and then hopefully it'll inspire people to say, do you know what, I could do this and get into it themselves. And owning your own website and maintaining your website is the best thing you can do for yourself right now. I think it's also punk as hell doing that, because you own your space, you have your own voice, and you don't have to sort of conform to the norms of Blue Sky, Mastodon, whatever, LinkedIn, and the other place. It's just a great way to be able to express yourself. Mine looks like shit at the moment, and I don't care. It's fine. And it's going to look like that for months. Mine always has been.
And it works. People can read text on there and see some of the photos I take.
I'm still trying to talk Jason into helping me do the design, but he's not letting me at the moment. He's told me I have to do it myself, which is not fair. I said, can you at least find me some nice fonts? I'm chipping away at him at the moment to help me with some creative, because he's so good and I am not so good these days. So But I do want it to look amazing. And by the end of this year, I hope it will. But I'm just going to keep chipping away at that series as time goes on. And yeah, by the end of it, it'll be a lot of blog posts that you can just read through. And yeah, hopefully learn to do stuff yourself.
Cool. Any events you plan to attend in 2026 that you already know of?
So, well, as you know, I had a busy year on the events last year. I did 9 talks and conferences last year. And yours was the last one, Beyond Telerand. So that this year, I'm slimming it a little bit. So I went to stay at the Browser last week. I'm going to All Day Hayes last conference in May in Leeds. Very good. Not going to get to Beyond Telerand, I'm afraid, this year, mate. But I'll go to FF. I'll go to FF Conf in Brighton.
Trying to make
well.
That as well, yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Good, good to see you. I missed FF Conf last year because I was planning on going, but when I landed back from Berlin, I could barely keep my eyes open. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to take it because I'd literally have to set off like 48 hours later, and I was like, I can't leave my family again. So yeah, but this year I'll go down and yeah. I love a trip to Brighton in November for that. So, yeah,
sure. I'm in Brighton next week. Oh, no, not this week. Oh, whoa.
Oh, we're recording. Yeah, of course, isn't it? It's out on Thursday, isn't it? Yeah, it is.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so going to go down tomorrow. It's like hell of a trip these days. It used to be quite easy. And now it's like always Heathrow or like the tunnel, right? And it's like long trip at least. Like, so easily takes 8 hours and longer these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, it's what it is. Well.
It's good fun though, isn't it?
Plan accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be a good event that one as well. Yeah.
Good. Wonderful. I mean, was a pleasure having you in here and chatting about it.
Thanks, mate.
I will put all
the
links in the show notes, like the Piccolilli stuff and everything we've been talking about. I made some notes and hope that people will get something out of our chat.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, I think if anything, it's just a different listening to different viewpoints is useful.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's
and challenge then, things. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Well, thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you, mate.
See you next time.
Pleasure. Take it easy.
Bye bye.
See ya.